I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. There's a new book out from the best-selling author Alex Kane. It's called Charlie and the Angels, the Outlaws, the Hell's Angels, and the 60 Years' War. Alex Kane isn't his real name. It's a pseudonym. He's written the number one bestseller, Befriend and Betray, and The Fat Mexican, The Bloody Rise of the Bandidos Motorcycle Club Under. The books have won prizes. He's spent nearly his whole adult life as a contracted agent, or kite. He has infiltrated criminal groups across the world, informing the police on gang activity. It's given him a front row seat, and he chronicles the Outlaws Motorcycle Club in this book. The Outlaws, who were formed in 1935, largely defined the look and mindset of the icon of the biker. In the 1950s, the Hells Angels out of California began overreaching, and a battle between the two groups for gang supremacy, turf, and blood begins. This book does a good job giving the history and wide influence of the Outlaws. Alex Kane joins me now, and I'll ask him about where around the world they've ended up and more. The book is published by Random House. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Alex Kane. Mr. Kane, good morning.
Hey, how are you doing?
Pretty good yourself.
Good, good.
So this is your third book, is that right?
Third book, that's correct.
Yeah. How did this career as an author come about?
Well, the first book was pretty well autobiography.
Right.
And through the 25 or 28 years of service, most people didn't know what I really did. And most people, even those back home, thought I was a criminal. Mm-hmm. And the plus being away from the kids for long periods, and them not really knowing or understanding what I was doing, I felt that I needed to put it down and let everybody know, basically, who I really was.
Yeah. And so has this, the starting with a memoir and then these two books afterwards, has it been a cathartic experience for you?
It was at first.
Yeah.
Now, it's almost like a mission. Like the book you were talking about, Charlie and the Angels.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to reach people and make them aware of who the Outlaws are, because everybody's concerned. Everybody knows about the Hells Angels, and nobody pays attention to the Outlaws. Who are now bigger in numbers and on a steady rise on the financial side, on a territorial side, and just making people aware, because out west here,
mm-hmm.
they will be affected directly when it hits the fan, then they'll know who the other side is. I mean, you talk about the war, they think Rock Machine, Hells Angels in Canada.
Yeah.
Well, Rock Machine is a support club for the Outlaws. So if you ever take a step back, if not one, take two, you'll find the Outlaws. They've been running this war for 60 years, and they're winning.
Yeah. So in terms of size, if you took the Hells Angels, the Bandidos, the Outlaws, and you'd had to rank them, where do the Outlaws sit?
Right now, they're number one in so far as size and numbers. In countries, they're about equal, because they're all over the world, I mean, you know.
Right.
There's only so many countries to go. But they're right up there. They let their allies, which are the Bandidos, take the forefront in so far as the fight against the Angels. And they sit back, finance it, and provide the logistics and reap the benefits.
And out here in Vancouver and British Columbia, how big are they here?
Well, they're opening up all over Alberta. They've opened up a chapter in Langley,
uh-huh.
which is part of the Lower Mainland, I think.
Yeah.
And they're well entrenched into a lot of the street gangs, and they're just playing their moves, placing their men, getting ready. Because the Angels now in Canada, pretty well, BC is the Alamo.
Uh-huh.
This is, they got their backs against the water. There's nowhere to go. And so everybody's getting into position for the inevitable struggle that's going to happen, probably sooner than later.
Now, who makes up the ranks in terms of race? Is it? It's not just white guys anymore, right?
The outlaws.
Yeah.
Oh no, the outlaws have chapters like in the Philippines and Japan, all over the place, and they don't. They weren't the racist. We'd say that the HA were.
No. Okay.
They and that allowed them to get into a lot stronger alliances than the Angels.
When they talk about the 1%, what does that mean? Does that have anything to do with the?
It's from law. It's from the old days when the takeover Hollister.
Okay. Yeah.
And that thing in 47.
Uh-huh.
And there was a lot of media against bikers. And the AMA, the American Biker Motorcycle Association, came on and said, 99% of people who ride bikes are honest citizens. So, of course, everybody picked up that 1%. I said, well, we're the 1% that he's talking about. We're the ones that don't respect social norms. And, you know, they started in 1935.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time ago. The and the media created them, created a lot of the image, and they just tried hard to live up to it.
Well, whenever we hear of a gang member or an associate being gunned down here in Vancouver or in Surrey, usually, what does that mean? Other than the obvious that someone's dead or that there's a risk for bystanders, does that mean that there's one less gangster, or does that void quickly get filled? And does it mean that it'll continue to be unsafe for the rest of us?
There's no simple answer to that. Some situations are individual situations between two regular drug dealers arguing about turf or a bad drug deal or a debt or whatever. So you can't put everything along the larger framework. But when it starts being tit for tat, then you've got at least two sides playing against each other, and so you got to look at who do they belong to. You look at guns or the UN gang, and the Scorpions. Like, where did it? And you have to figure out where these people belong in the map,
mm-hmm.
and who's their big daddy, so to speak. And then you start getting a better picture of what it's all about.
And you said that you think the future will continue to be violent in this part of the world?
Well, it has to end. And it's going to end here. Because, like I said, the Angels have been consolidating here. And they've been showing as much muscles and presence as they can. And of course the enemy is building all the way around them. Sooner or later, they're going to have to clash. It's just a matter of not if, it's just when.
And do you think policing in this part of the world can handle gangs, or is that something that we'll always
have? Not the health of the people.
Yeah.
It's easy to pin on the cops. Well, they're not doing their job, or they're shutting their eyes to this. They're not. They're just so overwhelmed with the gangs, the street gangs, and it's never ending. They need participation and awareness and alertness from you and from the other people out here. I'm not saying that a person should join up or that they should testify. I'm just saying that if they're aware, they can notice maybe down the street at the third house down the street. Motorcycles seem to accumulate at night.
Yeah.
And nobody seems to live there, or nobody ever comes out. And then in the day, in the morning, they're gone. Something's going on there that's not right. Well, then make them aware of it. They may already know, but if they don't, it's one more piece they can put into the puzzle. It's too easy to blame the obvious. Same as they used to blame bikers for all the crimes, which, you know, doesn't make any sense. But you can't blame the cops for all the faults. They're doing the best they can. Give them more money. But it's got to be like a two- or a three-pronged attack on them. You've got to hit them in the community when they're young and you know, give them an alternative to that lifestyle. Because they're getting gang members of 14, 15, and they'll shoot you as fast as anybody else. And the trouble is, their aim isn't that good. That's why you have all these all this collateral damage sometimes.
Right.
They'll shoot you right in the mall in a food court.
Yeah.
They don't care. So, you know, you got to get to these kids and show them an alternative. I don't mean preach to them. I'm just saying show them an alternative. And while the police and those agencies are kind of keeping the evil at bay, so to speak, and doing the best they can from that rigid law enforcement aspect, there should be people working on the future, and that's the kids. But you need money for that. Somebody's going to have to break up the piggy bank with a hammer. Get that money going where it's going to do some good. It'll pay off in the long run.
Yeah. Now, in terms of the threats against your life, you're still at risk, right? But you're not fearful at all, right?
You know, a person can be cautious, but only to a certain point. You can't live your life in fear. You take as many basic precautions as you can, and then go on with life. If you lose, you lose. But if I'm ever killed, it won't be a planned thing. It'll be a haphazard. Somebody driving by and saying, "Geez, isn't that the face of that guy on the poster in the clubhouse?"
Yeah.
And then you don't see them coming. So, you know, I could see something like that happening. But other than that, you can plan your stuff. And just be aware. Again, it's being aware. The book that you're talking about and that I'm talking about is important. People have got to know about the outlaws. Because otherwise, they're playing with a two-headed coin. And they've got the Hells Angels on their brain. And a two-headed coin is great as a parlor trick, but it has no currency, no value. What I want to do is show them the other side of the coin and how it affects them directly. Mm-hmm. And look at that shooting where one of you guys, the Bacon Brothers, got shot and an angel was wounded or whatever. But there were two women there that got wounded too, pretty bad. Those women, not those particular ones, but figuratively, those women are your brothers, your sisters, your mothers, your daughters. They're the ones at risk, too. And so, you know, let's kind of get our head out of the fog and start preparing ourselves and start being more aware and conscious of what's really out there.
Now you lived out here for a bit too, didn't you, in Vancouver?
Yeah, Vancouver. I lived here for years in my early days.
Yeah.
And returned here many times. A special place for me here in BC, you know.
Yeah. And then some of the infiltrating work you did was here and also in Washington State, right?
I don't work where I live.
I see.
I used to use this as my base of operation to go work somewhere else. Like when I worked in Hong Kong for all those years, I was still living here, basically.
Yeah.
And there was an association with the triad members from Vancouver, but I wasn't working on them here, per se.
Yeah. Well, when you're infiltrating a gang, and you're with them, I guess, was there any time that you did anything illegal?
No, because, You know, you draw your own lines. And something is illegal when it's prohibited by law. When a law, I think it's what, Bill 36 or something like that, that allows under controlled situations an agent and or member of the police to break the law, but there's very, very tight restrictions. It isn't, you don't go around, you know, dealing drugs. But if you got to show a bike, sell a stolen bike, well, you didn't really steal it. You got it from impound or whatever. And but you sell it as a stolen bike just to build your credibility. That's just an example. But so is that a crime? I don't know. I mean, legally it's not. So to do a crime for your personal benefit, you don't do that, period.
Now, the Outlaws will probably not like this book, Charlie and the Angels, but there is a role that books like this and television shows that we see, you know, that portray motorcycle gangs and the sort. I mean, they have a role in our popular culture, perhaps, I don't know if they increase popularity, but it certainly increases the myth surrounding them. Do you think that this book does that in some extent?
Well, I don't think that book advances their myth, because it's not complimentary to most of them. It's factual, it's true, but you know it's certainly not flattering. And the more that's out there, the more for those interested in the genre, if they're reading a good balance, then they're more aware of what's going on. People use the word outlaw. You look at the covers on Amazon for sale, and it's outlaw bikers. They don't mean the outlaws. They mean outlaw bikers in the general term.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's such a misused word. Even all gangs are called OMG. Outlaw motorcycle gangs. But it's not the outlaws they're talking about. This book talks about the outlaw club, not just the use of the word. That patch behind there on their back is affectionately called Charlie.
The skull?
That's why it's Charlie and the Angels.
Yeah. Are you enjoying the career as a writer, and will you write other books?
I've got one more in the oven right now. It'll be coming out in the fall, and it's the last of the biker trilogy. And then after that, I hopefully have a novel out, which is a lot less work.
Yeah.
I mean, you can work out of your head as opposed to having to do all that research and interviews and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, this has been an interesting conversation today, Alex. I appreciate your time. Good luck with the book. It's a hell of a good read.
Yeah, and like I say, it's up to you guys to put it out in the true sense, where people know why they're buying it, not just buy it because it's there, but why they're buying it and what they need to draw from it.
Indeed.
Okay?
Indeed. Thanks, Alex.
Talk to you later, man.
Yeah, bye-bye. The book is called Charlie and the Angels, The Outlaws, the Hells Angels, and the 60 Years War. It's published by Random House. Its author, Alex Kane, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.